It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You're listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, hello, America. I am your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to the Second Amendment Radio Show. We like to just trim that down to 2A Radio. Of course, the website is 2aradio.com. One of the things we hit on a regular basis here is all of the lies perpetrated by your government and mine about all of the illegal guns in Mexico. Allegedly all coming from the United States, allegedly coming from people straw purchasing guns here in the States and selling them off to members or associates of the drug cartels in Mexico to be run south across the border into Mexico. Now, we've blown the lid off of this 18 months ago. Certainly done a lot of justice in actually giving true numbers and where all of the lies are perpetrated from, how all the numbers are getting changed around in Washington. Of course, CBS News did a report about a week or so ago dealing with this Project Gunrunner, as they call it, and really found out that the ATF has been, as we've suspected, running protection for all of the gun runners that are buying guns in America and sending them south. Running protection. We have found out now, as I have suspected and said so since day one on the air, that this goes all the way up into the Justice Department, where Eric Holder himself has looked at this and said, as far as we can tell, looked at this and said, we believe that this is legal, so we're going to allow this. Where ATF's going to be able to provide places for these gun runners to buy their guns by telling the federal firearms licensees, go ahead and sell the guns. Go ahead and sell these guns off to the people that want to buy the guns. And we're going to watch them. Okay, great. So then what they will do is they watch them, and they basically provide protection for them to run these guns south of the border into Mexico. They've been doing this for the last 2 years. Now, why would the ATF be doing this? The ATF is doing this because the lies of 85 to 90% of the guns used by the Mexican drug cartels come from the United States. That's the lie. They're using numbers from 2008. In 2008, Mexican officials ended up with some 30,000 guns confiscated from crime scenes dealing with Mexican drug cartels. They gave a certain percentage of those to the ATF to trace. The ATF was able to trace a certain percentage of the ones given to them. 87% of the guns given to the ATF, they were able to trace back to the U.S. So they round that number up and say 90% of the guns. Now, the actual number of guns actually traced to the United States of the 30,000 that were confiscated was 3,600, which is 12% of the guns. Not 90%, not 80%, not 85%, none of that. 12%. The average age of that gun, of those guns, 14 years old. Hardly straw purchasers selling new guns purchased out of gun stores to gun runners who are affiliated with the Mexican drug cartels and running them south across the border. Those numbers didn't work out. We blew the lid off of that. So the ATF and the Justice Department got together and schemed up this plan to where they're going to get federal firearms licensees, the gun dealers, the FFL gun dealers, to sell the guns to these traffickers or the people who are straw purchasing for the traffickers. It's all a network. They all know who each other are. It's not you and I going in there and buying guns. It's people affiliated with these gun traffickers who are affiliated with the drug cartels. The ATF is going to provide safe haven of places where these guys can go to buy these guns. Then they're going to provide protection for them to get all the way south and into Mexico. Now, the ATF has said that they're doing this in an effort not to just get the little guy, but to trace it back to the drug cartels and actually try to take down a cartel. Absolute lies. Absolute lies. All they are doing is padding the numbers so that when the 2010, 2011, 2012, when all of these years subsequently fall and the Mexican officials end up with all these guns out of America, a higher and higher percentage will have been newer guns that were actually straw purchased and sent to Mexico in recent years. Because our last lie, it didn't muster. None of that happened. So the ATF is actually perpetrating these international crimes. Okay? So this is where we're at. To say that they wanted to build a case and take down a drug cartel, that's a total lie. Because the cases have already been built against the drug cartels for guns and violence. I'm sorry, for drugs and violence. Not guns specifically. Plus, the ATF, as well as all the other federal agencies in the U.S., have absolutely no enforcement authority in Mexico whatsoever. So their claims that they're trying to build a case in Mexico is absolute lies. Trying to cover up. Because the Mexican authorities were never told about this. Nobody in the Mexican government knew about this Project Gunwalker. Nobody. Because the ATF held it close inside. What they are doing is padding the numbers for the anti-gun Obama regime to be able to come after guns here in America and impede our Second Amendment rights. The courts and certainly state legislatures all across America over the last 3 or 4 years have really been releasing controls and releasing their fundamentalist ideals against the Second Amendment and against our protected rights to keep and bear arms. So the ATF has been scheming in this way to make it a public sentiment against American guns and against American gun owners, because look at all the death and destruction they're causing in Mexico. So CBS News came out and they did a part two of their report dealing with Project Gunwalker, the ATF's handling and perpetrating of running protection for these gun runners affiliated with the gun cartels taking these guns south into Mexico. So we're going to play part two of the CBS report as soon as we come back in the next segment. So I want everybody to stick around and listen to this, and then we're going to discuss it just a bit right after these words. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you're listening live right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Good evening, everyone. They are two presidents leading a war against a common enemy, Mexican drug cartels. President Obama welcomed Mexico's President Felipe Calderon to the White House. And Mr. Obama said the two countries are making progress against drug gangs.
To combat the southbound flow of guns and money, we are screening all southbound rail cargo, seizing many more guns bound for Mexico, and we are putting more gun runners behind bars.
Absolute lies.
But one of the men on the front lines of the drug war is telling a very different story to CBS News, making an accusation that could cost him his job. An agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms claims the agency has a policy that is actually putting guns in the cartel's hands. Here's investigative correspondent Cheryl Atkinson.
John Dodson, a federal agent, says what he was asked to do was beyond belief.
You were intentionally letting guns go to Mexico.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, the agency was.
An alcohol, tobacco, and firearms senior agent assigned to this Phoenix office since 2010, Dodson's job is to stop gun trafficking across the border. Instead, he says he was ordered to sit by and watch it happen. Investigators call the tactic letting guns walk, in this case into the hands of criminals who would use them in Mexico and the U.S. Dodson's bosses say that never happened. Now he's risking his job to go public.
I'm boots on the ground here in Phoenix, and telling you, we've been doing it every day since I've been here. Here I am. Tell me I didn't do the things that I did. Tell me you didn't order me to do the things that I did. Tell me it didn't happen. Now you have a name on it. You have a face to put with it. Here I am. Someone. Now. Tell me it didn't happen.
Agent Dodson and other insiders say the gun walking strategy was approved all the way to the Justice Department. The idea was to see where the guns ended up, build a big case, and take down a major cartel. And it was all kept secret from Mexico.
ATF named the case Fast and Furious. This surveillance video obtained by CBS News shows suspected drug cartel suppliers carrying boxes of weapons to their cars at a Phoenix gun shop. Those long boxes being loaded into the red car are AK-47 type assault rifles.
He's armed again, carrying another, appears to be five boxes, Howard Keyes, Pelican, and Hurley pistol.
So it turns out ATF not only allowed the guns to walk, they videotaped it. Documents show the inevitable result. The guns ATF let go began showing up at crime scenes in Mexico. And as ATF stood by, watching thousands of weapons hit the street, the Fast and Furious group supervisor noted the escalating Mexican violence. 958 killed in March 2010, the most violent month since 2005. The same email notes, our subjects purchased 359 firearms during March alone, including numerous Barrett 50 caliber rifles.
Did you feel that ATF was partly, perhaps, to blame for the escalating violence in Mexico and on the border?
Yes, ma'am. I even asked them if they could see the correlation between the two. The more that our guys buy, the more violence that we're having down there.
Senior agents, including Dodson, told us they confronted their supervisors over and over.
And what was the answer? What do they say?
If you're going to make an omelet, you're going to scramble some eggs.
There was so much opposition to the gun walking that an ATF supervisor issued this email noting a schism among the agents. Whether you care or not, people of rank and authority at headquarters are paying close attention to this case. We are doing what they envisioned. If you don't think this is fun, you're in the wrong line of work. Maybe the Maricopa County Jail is hiring detention officers, and you can get $30,000 to serve lunch to inmates.
We just knew it wasn't going to end well. There's no way it could.
Then, on December 14, 2010, Border Patrol agent Brian Terry was gunned down. Dodson got the bad news from a colleague.
And they said, did you hear about the Border Patrol agent? And I said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, it was one of Fast and Furious guns. And there's really not much you can say after that.
Two assault rifles ATF had let walk nearly a year before, similar to these, were found at Terry's murder.
I felt guilty. I mean, it's crushing. I don't know how to explain it. I mean,
Dodson and a dozen other ATF sources have all told the same story to Senator Grassley, who's investigating.
You've tried to get some answers from ATF. What's been the response?
The response has been practically zilch, from the standpoint that documents we want, we have not gotten them, and I think it's a case of stonewalling.
Dodson says he hopes that speaking out helps the family of Border Patrol agent Brian Terry. They haven't been told much of anything about his murder or where the bullet came from.
First of all, I would tell him that I'm sorry. Second of all, I would tell him that I've done everything that I can for them to get the truth. After this, I don't know what else I can do, but I hope they get it.
Dodson says they never did take down a drug cartel. However, he says thousands of Fast and Furious weapons are still out there and will be claiming victims on both sides of the border for years to come. Cheryl Atkinson, CBS News, Washington.
Late today, the ATF said it will convene a panel to look into its national firearms trafficking strategy, but refused to comment specifically on Cheryl's report.
Meaning that the ATF is going to investigate themselves, and all they're going to do is say, all right, well, how do we prevent this damage from getting out? Well, let me tell you what they did. How do they prevent it from getting any worse? They put out a memo about needing positive press. So as the CBS News investigates gun walking allegations, the ATF let thousands of these different guns and all kinds of weapons get into the hands of these criminals. The ATF bosses have remained largely silent. Let's see. We've had an ongoing request. CBS has had an ongoing request for information and on-camera interviews with both ATF and the Department of Justice since they okayed this, since prior to their first report, which aired February 22nd. A similar lack of response has been reported by Senator Charles Grassley, who you heard on this interview, who asked for documents and briefings from ATF. And basically, he's getting completely stonewalled on this. They're just flying him the bird. CBS has now learned that after their February 22nd report, ATF's chief public affairs officer sent an all-call internal memo to ATF public information officers in an effort to, quote, lessen the coverage of such stories in the news cycle by replacing them with good stories about ATF, end quote. The memo asked that the ATF PIOs to, quote, please make every effort in the next 2 weeks to maximize coverage of ATF operations, enforcement actions, arrests at the local and regional level, end quote, in hopes it would drown out the negative coverage by CBS. At the time, the memo noted, fortunately, the CBS story has not sparked any follow-up coverage by mainstream media and seems to have fizzled. However, just on the night before this memo came out, CBS News continued the reporting on the issue. And, of course, they plan on staying on the story. Here's the full ATF internal memo. Public information officers, please make every effort for the next 2 weeks to maximize coverage of ATF operations, enforcement actions, arrests at local and regional level. Given the negative coverage by CBS Evening News last week and upcoming events this week, the Bureau should look for every opportunity to push coverage of good stories. Fortunately, the CBS story has not sparked any follow-up coverage by mainstream media and seems to have fizzled. It was shoddy reporting as CBS failed to air on-the-record interviews by former ATF officials and HQ statements for attribution that express opposing views and explain the law and difficulties of firearms traffic investigations. The CBS producer for the story made only a feigned effort at the 11th hour to reach ATF HQ for comment. This week, to 3-1-11, Attorney General Holder testifies on Capitol Hill and likely will get questions about the allegations in the story. Also, the 3-3-2011 Mexican President Calderon visit will visit the White House and likely will testify on the Hill. He will probably draw attention to the lack of political support for demand and letter 3 and Project Gunrunner. More after the break, guys. We're going to finish up this internal quirky memo of the ATF after we return. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
And welcome back from the break. We're going to continue on with this memo that the ATF put out after the CBS News report came out. Continues, says, ATF needs to proactively push positive stories this week in an effort to preempt some negative reporting or, at minimum, lessen the coverage of such stories in the news cycle by replacing them with good stories about the ATF. Okay, then that must mean that this is a bad story about ATF, and you fully admit it. Continuing, says, the more time we spend highlighting the great work of the agents through press releases and various media outreaches in the coming days and weeks, the better off we will be. Thanks for your cooperation in this matter. If you have any significant operations that should get national media coverage, please reach out to the Public Affairs Division for support, coordination, and clearance. Thank you, Scott L. Thomason, Chief ATF Public Affairs Division, Washington, D.C. Okay, so what it's all about is it's about lessening the damage of, admittedly, bad press on, admittedly, a bad deal. The entire project has been bad. The Mexican government, since this has come out, has demanded full information detailing this. Because the ATF has, in this case, thanks to the Justice Department approving it, committed international crimes, assisted in the commission of international crimes, of gun trafficking. Do you get this? Interpol should investigate ATF and the Justice Department, specifically Eric Holder, specifically Janet Napolitano, head of DHS, under which the ATF falls. Now, we know that the government, their primary job, is to protect the freedoms and liberties of Americans. That is the primary job of the government, any government, be it from the city up to the federal, to protect our freedoms and liberties. Well, they're not protecting our freedoms or liberties at all. Listen to this, just out of the state of Illinois. Illinois' attorney general wants to publish the state's list of gun owners. Okay, in order to be a gun owner in Illinois, you have to get a gun owner's identification card. You also have to register your guns with the state. So the attorney general wants to publish freely a list of every known gun owner in the entire state, potentially placing the lives and safety of non-gun owners at risk. Not potentially, they would be. They'd be placing the lives and safety of non-gun owners at risk. It's a list for criminals of what the best potential victims are. If they're not on this list, then they probably don't own a gun. We can go after them. Of course, the anti-gun lobby has sought to impose what it calls the sensible restrictions on gun ownership ever since the Otis McDonald case. Otis McDonald, a 76-year-old Army veteran who lives in a high-crime area of Chicago, won his case before the U.S. Supreme Court, saying the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution he fought to protect provides him the protection of the right to keep and bear arms. It doesn't give him the right. It acknowledges and protects that right. These restrictions vary from training and education requirements to waiting periods to limiting the number of purchases. Some are indeed sensible, but some are simply designed to discourage proposed gun owners to do with too many hoops to jump through and too many fees to have to pay. Now, gun rights opponents in Illinois apparently have hit on a new tactic: shame and embarrass gun owners by publicly naming them in such the same manner. Some communities print the names of Johns who patronize hookers in the local paper, or that the information of registered sex offenders is readily available to the general public simply by doing an internet search. In a liberal mind, patronizing a lady of the evening by protecting your family with a firearm are illicit activities that should be discouraged. That's our whole idea here. Now, just last fall, a reporter for the Associated Press made a Freedom of Information Act request to Illinois police for the names of the 1.3 million residents who hold state firearm owners identification card, or FOID, firearm owners identification cards, as well as information about the types of weapons they're authorized to possess. Authorized. It's a right, but it's an authorization they're looking at. The permit holders' addresses and phone numbers would not be released. But it wouldn't be that difficult for some anti-gun group to research and add them to the list of names and weapons. If the state publishes a list of gun owners, Republican State Representative Ron Steffen said, quote, "You are by design also publishing a list of everyone who doesn't own a firearm." Stevens is pushing a bill on the Illinois General Assembly to lock down the list. State Attorney General Lisa Madigan says she sees no invasion of privacy or endangerment of individuals in releasing the names that she has ruled to be a public document. Now, get this one more time. State Attorney General Lisa Madigan says she sees no invasion of privacy or endangerment of individuals in releasing the names, the list of names, that she has ruled to be a public document. Richard Pearson, director of the Illinois State Rifle Association, disagrees. He says, quote, "The safety of real people is at stake here. Once the information is released, it will be distributed to street gangs and gun control groups who will use the data to target gun owners for crime and harassment." Well, in addition to that, if the name isn't on there, it's a lot easier to have somebody become one of your victims because you don't see their name on the list of gun owners. Madigan cites no real public benefit from releasing the list of gun owners. Mark Walsh, campaign director for the Illinois Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, anti-gun group, claims making these records public would be, quote, "helpful in making sure that local law enforcement and the state police are following up with these people who have FOID, Firearm Owner Identification Card Program, cards, who should be prohibited purchasers." Okay, that makes no sense at all. Let me read it to you again. "Helpful in making sure that local police and state police are following up with these people who have firearms owner identification cards who should be prohibited purchasers." Okay, releasing the list, Mark Walsh of the Illinois Campaign to Screw Other People in Illinois from Being Well-Armed, that information is already available to the police at the state and local levels. Releasing it publicly doesn't help out the police at all. So what you're doing is you are using a false statement. Now, this attorney general in the state of Illinois, Lisa Madigan, as an elected official, part of the Illinois government, her first order of business is to protect the freedoms and liberties of those in Illinois, but yet wants to publish a list of people who the state has said, okay, you've paid your fees and gone through what we say you need to go through, so we will allow you to own a gun. Now, this entire FOID program is absolutely unconstitutional. Absolutely unconstitutional. Especially in the wake of McDonald v. Chicago. However, state government here is still working with the anti-gunners to try to dime out the people who do exercise their Second Amendment rights. And they're going to make a very dangerous and volatile situation if they release the list. Stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on! I know that you are wrong.
in a showing by the NRA, they have helped a California homeowners committee to drop a gun ban plan. The Greenstone County community, located in Eldora County, California, near Placerville, has historically allowed some sports shooting. But a member of the board of directors of the Greenstone Country Homeowners Association wanted to change that. He asked the board to change the covenants, conditions, and restrictions, the CC&Rs, of the community to completely ban the discharge of firearms and air guns and eliminate all target shooting and other shooting throughout the gated equestrian community. Thankfully, Bob Arist, a resident of the Greenstone Country and National Rifle Association member, brought this issue to the attention of the NRA's California attorneys at the law firm of Mitchell and Associates PC, who assisted him and other neighbors in defeating the attempt to do away with shooting in the community. Arist and a group of about 15 Greenstone homeowners attended the August 12, 2010 Greenstone County HOA Board of Directors meeting to speak against the proposed changes to the CC&Rs. At the meeting, they pointed out the many flaws in the proposed revision, including that the revisions would inappropriately ban the discharge of BB guns, air guns, bows, and nail guns because these devices discharge projectiles by means of compressed air or spring. Mr. Arist also pointed out to the board of directors that the proper procedure to implement a change to the CC&Rs had not been followed. Under the HOA bylaws, proper procedure for amending the CC&Rs call for the HOA CCR revision committee to first consider a proposal to revise the CC&Rs and then recommend items for change to the board only if the CC&R committee finds the suggested changes appropriate. Instead of taking this proper route, the director, who wanted to ban the use of guns in Greenstone Country, that's the community area, instead of taking this proper route, he attempted to push the amendment through the board of directors without first going to the CC&R committee. Surprise, surprise, an anti-gunner not following the rules, not following the established layout of the way things are supposed to go, not playing by the rules again. Let's see, finally, Arist informed the board of directors that he had consulted with attorneys for the NRA, and if they wanted to push the revision, the NRA was prepared to back him and the rest of the supporting homeowners all the way. Acknowledging the NRA's involvement and recognizing their mistake, the board of directors referred the proposal back to CC&R Revision Committee to make the recommendation for the proposed changes if the committee felt it was necessary. With the input of Arist and the others, CC&R committee found no reason to revise the current version of CC&Rs, so the proposed change was defeated. 17 years ago, the NRA and CRPA, California Rifle and Pistol Association, joined forces to fight these sorts of things. So, in this situation, they actually did. And they did a good job. Here's the thing, guys. I think it was Thomas Jefferson, I believe. I think it was Thomas Jefferson who said, the best person for politics is the person that doesn't want the job. How much more appropriate is that? What that says is the person that would do the job the best has no interest in being involved in public politics because they're actually out doing something. The people that aren't out there doing something, want to have a little bit of power and authority, those are the ones who seek public office as a general rule. We're going to switch now over to Dallas, Texas. A Dallas cop has been arrested for beating a motorist. Now, we've seen, really, it seems a lot in the last 2 or 3 years, cops getting more and more old school, if you will, more and more out of hand, beating people up and mistreating the citizens. Well, it's not being stood for very well. Police officer Quintemis Williams, 25 years old, was fired from the Dallas Police Department and arrested following a disciplinary hearing this last Wednesday. He's been charged with official oppression, which is a Class A misdemeanor, punishable by up to a year in jail and a maximum $4,000 fine, or both. The suspect, Roderick Lyles, was stopped on the 9400 block of Abrams Road in Dallas on January 28th just what, a little over a month ago. Officers were attempting to make an arrest for driving on a suspended license when he resisted. A scuffle ensued, and Lyle fell on top of Williams, hurting the officer's arm. Another officer used a stun gun on Lyles and then handcuffed him. The incident was caught on a dash cam, and the video was released by Dallas Police Department this last Wednesday. The suspect can be seen handcuffed and laying on the pavement while Williams starts to beat him. DPD Chief David Bowen says Williams, who was white, became angry and, quote, out of control when he was seen kicking Lyles in the head and spraying him in the face with pepper spray. This is after he's on the ground and cuffed. He's in custody. Now he's being kicked in the head and sprayed in the face with pepper spray. Here's what the chief says, quote, Officer Williams then began to strike Mr. Lyles with his fists and then with a flashlight to free his arm. Several officers who witnessed the incident reported it immediately, and one officer stepped in to stop Williams. The Dallas Police Department have contacted the FBI for possible civil rights violations against the officer. Another officer was also fired for giving misleading information in his report. This isn't the first time the Dallas Police Department has seen trouble with its officers. In 2010, three rookie officers were fired after they were captured on dash cam beating a motorcyclist, Andrew Collins, we talked about that here on the radio, after seeing him ride on a sidewalk. One of the officers can be heard saying he planned to beat the crap out of Collins. Officer Randolph and Bauer disregarded orders not to chase Collins. At one point, one of the officers walked over to the patrol car and moves the camera. Those officers were charged with assault and official oppression and were indicted in September. One of them, Officer Kevin Randolph, was also charged with tampering with a government document for allegedly, altering a police report. Following a brief chase, Randolph reportedly ran up to the suspect and proceeded to beat him with a police baton. Another rookie officer, Paul Bauer, punched and kneed the man before handcuffing him. 22 officers responded to the scene. 22 cops. That's an entire squad of cops. Well, this is what the DPD chief said at the time. He says, this won't be tolerated. This is not indicative of the Dallas Police Department. No one incident defines our character. Okay, you're right. However, several incidents do. And now you've got another one going on and yet another young rookie cop. Whoever is training your police at their academy level, whoever is training your police in the field training level directly after the academy, there's something broken when they continue to do these things. Now, NPR's Wade Goodwin told David Green, co-host of All Things Considered, in September 2010, he said, quote, if this sort of thing is going to happen in 2010, the city's not going to tolerate either the beating itself or the attempt to cover it up if in fact it happened. Well, they're right, because now this new cop has been fired and arrested, and the information sent to the FBI for possible federal civil rights charges. Brown said there's no indication that race was a factor in either the Lyles case or that of Collins. Well, that's good to hear. They're beating up anybody they so feel like. Big deal. We're not really concerned about the race. We're just going to beat your ass if we feel that you need to have an ass whipping. It's called street justice, guys. And a lot of cops like to dish out street justice. I was a cop in Vegas. I saw a few different cops dish out a little bit of street justice here and there. I never saw it get out of hand. You know, no more than, you know, pushing the guy into the back of the car a little bit more roughly than what the average citizen would get. Or when they're cuffed, instead of escorting them to the car, pushing them at the car so they kind of bounce off of it before they grab them and put them in. However, one guy I went to the academy with got fired for taking a handcuffed suspect around the corner and smacking him around a bit. They deserve to be fired. They deserve to be charged.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.